Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Write Club. The first rule of Write Club is you don't talk about Write Club, but we'll make an exception in your case.
Welcome to Write Club, the podcast for writers and readers everywhere. I'm Steph, and with me are Teresa, Linda, and Heather.
Hi!
Not only is this the 100th episode of Write Club, the podcast, but it's also two whole years since we first launched and started to climb a very, very steep learning curve. So we're going to celebrate today. Very satisfying pop.
Oh, cork. Listen for the bubbles.
Oh, yes. Teresa's pouring for us. We're going to take a chance to look back on the past 2 years later in the show. But before that, we'll have all the usual features. It's Heather's turn to read from her work in progress. Teresa is planning to amaze us with a short explanation of a little-known piece of punctuation. I can't wait for that, and I wish I could see Pat's face when you do it. However, first, we're going to ask Linda to ask us to...
Name the novel.
Yes, I'm going to.
Have a glass of champagne, Linda.
Thank you. Shall we clink?
Cheers.
Cheers.
Well done, us. Happy birthday.
Nice. Well, this one is something that I'm sure you're going to get right away. But hey, you know, it's the 100th episode. I'm running out of the novels. Okay. The author of this novel, published in 1975, was said to be a writer of impeccable literary credentials, but her three novels previous to this one had not sold well. You won't get it from that.
No.
Okay.
You're absolutely right.
Now, here comes a more telling one. The author became interested in the true story of a 28-year-old school teacher who had been brutally murdered in January 1973 by a man she had reportedly picked up in a singles bar. She wrote an article about it for Esquire, but they declined to publish it, fearing legal ramifications. She then decided to write it as a novel.
No.
Oh, I'm so surprised. I thought you would have it immediately. You'll get it this time.
I hope so.
This will give it to you. The book was made into a movie in 1977, starring Diane Keaton, Tuesday Weld, and Richard Gere. It received mixed reviews, but was a success at the box office and received two Academy Award nominations. Although the author herself detested the film, she praised Diane Keaton's performance.
Mm.
That's it, three.
Diane Keaton and Richard Gere.
I don't know it. I'm really sorry. I don't know it.
I've no idea.
You've got us.
Absolutely.
I'm so surprised. Looking for Mr. Goodbar.
Okay.
By Judith Rosner.
I better read it.
You haven't. I thought everybody had seen the movie and read the book.
No. You probably have to be American.
Or maybe you have to be really old.
I can remember some films from the 70s.
Really? The Three Little Pigs? Bambi, maybe.
Well, that's much it.
But I'm going to have to read this next. Following this book, she wrote a novel called Attached, and it's about a woman who has unfulfilled needs and desires and becomes sexually attracted to conjoined female twins. And she just obsesses about these twins, and it sounds like a very interesting book.
That sounds rather intriguing.
Okay. Well, thank you, Linda. So, Heather, it's your turn to read to us. So what have you got for us today?
Well, I'm going to read the start of my entry into the Money Litfest short story competition.
Oh, goody.
All right.
The closing date was the end of November, so I'm waiting for the call to see where I come in the ratings. Here goes. Hello, Charlie. The last 45 years evaporated, and I was back in Stapleford High School, standing in front of 12 teenage girls, the palms of my hands moist and sticky, sweat trickling down my spine. I turned to face the voice from my past, and there she was, just as I remembered, She was, of course, older, but still beautiful. Her hair now pure white, still curled inwards just below her jawline, framing her perfectly symmetrical features. Her almond-shaped eyes are piercing blue, her lashes long and dark, her lips slightly parted, showing brilliant white teeth. Her complexion flawless, without the aid of cosmetics. She exuded a glow of health and vitality. So this is where you've been hiding all this time. I should have known. Her unerring gaze seemed to reach into the very core of me. The rep has just been telling us about Patrick Lee Firmer. When she told us about his house in Cardamilly, I thought about you, and here you are. I live here, I cursed my stupid, lame reply. I stood staring at her, unable to speak, unable to discipline my thoughts. Well, I may bump into you again. I'm in stupor for 2 weeks with my girlfriends. You may remember them from school. I didn't. I'll be in Toast Eckies on the front later if you fancy joining me. I sounded pathetic. We'll be there. We can't wait to get into the holiday spirit. They all giggled, just as they had all those years ago. I'd forgotten how that sound made me feel. All those of the Leftron Hotel, follow me. The rep's voice broke into my thoughts. Rosemary smiled, turned to follow the meandering crowd, and without a backward glance, disappeared down the road. It was September 1974. I was 21, and it was my first teaching job. I'd done a couple of placements, but this was the real thing. This was my beginning. As an only child with a strict military upbringing, I was determined to break from my father's grasp. My mother died shortly after I was born, so apart from a string of nannies and aunts, it had just been the two of us. The only thing I had taken any interest in had been his tales of fighting in Greece and his friendship with Patrick Lee Firmer. My name is Charlie Rain. Outside this classroom, I'm Mr. Rain to you, but within these four walls, you can call me Charlie. I was young, a modern teacher, and I knew everything.
First thing you do is don't give them your name.
Well, it depends.
I liked the way you kind of had us thinking maybe he was, that was his contemporary. Rosemary was his contemporary from school. I thought until then that he'd been at school with her.
Right.
Until we realised that he was the teacher.
Yeah.
So that kind of flipped my perception.
Yeah, and I don't know where this is going, but I don't trust a woman who hasn't changed her hairstyle in 40 years. That's a very conventional person, isn't it?
Yeah, I liked it very much. I enjoyed reading it, and I think you've done a wonderful job with setting up, you know, this situation where something's going to happen that's unexpected here. I like that. I like it. There was only one place where I felt it could be shortened a bit, and it was when they said they can't wait to get into the holiday spirit. And I thought, well, they should already be in the holiday spirit, aren't they, if they're here and they're running around, etc.
Well, if they're Brits, they probably started drinking as soon as they got to the airport.
That's all. Very minor little thing. That's all I
said. Wonder if you could do something with the description of her, because for a start, I wondered how he would know that she wasn't wearing cosmetics. I'm not sure that a man would be aware of that, but that's just kind of small.
Well, it's kind of about perception. It may be his perception
that she's not wearing cosmetics. And the kind of list of things about her, I wonder if the, you know, almond shaped eyes, long lashes and that sort of thing, I wonder if you might kind of use action rather than the description there, so she could look from under her long lashes or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
I
wanted it to sound a little bit obsessive.
I think so.
I thought it was a good start.
And how long has it got to be, the novel, the story for the competition?
1,500 to 2,000 words.
Right. So we've just got the beginning, and it's a good setup. It's an interesting set of characters.
Yeah.
And, wait and see what happens next.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Yeah, interesting.
Good, looking forward to that.
Yes.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Well, thank you, Heather, and good luck with that. We'll look forward to hearing how you do. Now, Teresa, you've got something to share with us which is going to amaze Pat.
Yes, well, I was hoping to astonish Pat. by introducing her to a punctuation mark she's never heard of before. But as she's not here, I don't know if she's heard of it or not. I do have illustrations, which obviously doesn't help you listening, but I will post them when I post the links.
Brilliant.
Okay. So this just came to mind the other day. I remember when I was at school in the 70s, coming across a punctuation mark called interrobang. Some of you may have come across this yourselves. Anyone remember that?
No, never.
It's quite easy to make an interrobang on a typewriter because you just superimpose a question mark and an exclamation mark. So if you think about typing one over the other, that gives you interrobang. And it's used to express a question and surprise or astonishment. For example, you don't read books.
Question mark. Exclamation point.
Exactly. You're how old? Call that a car. Okay, so those are examples where an interrobang would come in handy. I found it was actually invented in 1962 by Martin K. Spector, who was head of an advertising agency. He thought it would be good in adverts to express surprised rhetorical questions, as above. He rejected several suggested names, including ExclamaQuest, and Quizding. And the name that he chose combined the Latin for rhetorical question, interrogatio, and bang, which is printer's slang for an exclamation mark.
Sorry.
Okay. Oh dear, oh dear. In 1965, interrobang was included in the Americana typeface. And in 1968, an interrobang key was available on some Remington typewriters.
Goodness.
Yeah. In the 1970s, replacement interrobang keycaps and typefaces were available for some Smith Corona typewriters. It was in vogue for much of the 1960s. The word interrobang appeared in some dictionaries, and the mark was used in magazines and newspaper articles.
Hmm. Gosh.
Most fonts nowadays don't include it, but it hasn't disappeared. Lucida Grande includes the interrobang, and Microsoft provides several versions of the interrobang in the Windings 2 character set, which you get with Microsoft Office. It was accepted into Unicode and is included in several other fonts, including Lucida Sans Unicode, Arial Unicode, and Calibri, and so on. The State Library of New South Wales in Australia uses an interrobang as its logo, as does the educational publishing company Pearson, which intends it to convey the excitement and fun of learning.
And it does look a bit like a P, I suppose, if you've got a question mark with an exclamation mark over it. So you could use it as the P of Pearson.
Looking into interrobang led me to seek other obscure punctuation marks. And I found an article by Adrienne Kretzow on the Mental Floss website. I'll share that link with you on the Facebook page. Gave another 12 weird examples. First of all, the percontation point.
Percontation? What could that be?
Or also known as rhetorical question mark. And that's simply a question mark back to front.
Like a mirror image.
Yeah, the mirror image of the question mark. The backward question mark was proposed by Henry Denham as early as 1580 to end a rhetorical question and was used until the early 1600s. Alcander de Brahm introduced the idea of the irony mark in the 19th century, and this is a bit like a small s above a full stop. Sorry. So that is the irony mark. It comes before a statement to indicate the ironic tone. We thought that might be useful for Americans. apologies. In 1966, the French author Hervé Bazin proposed a similar glyph in his book Plumon Loiseau, along with five other innovative marks, including the love point, which imagine a reverse question mark facing a question mark sharing the same point. Mm-hmm. It looks
like a heart.
Right, that's
right. That's the love point. And it could be used, for example, after happy birthday or I miss you as an expression of love. The acclamation point, a demonstration of goodwill or welcome, is like an exclamation mark with an extra stroke at an ankle to the first. A bit like the love mark, but with an exclamation rather than question mark. Mm. The certitude point is an exclamation mark with a crossbar or, to put it another way, a dagger above a full stop, which expresses absolute conviction. The doubt point, a bit like a cursive Z over a full stop, is the opposite. Authority point, like the certitude point but with a downward curved crossbar, shades your sentence with a note of expertise, like a parasol over a sultan. Well, I was there and that's what happened. Certitude point. Likewise, right. It's also used to indicate an order or advice that should be taken seriously as it comes from a voice of authority. The rather lovely Sark mark spirals around a full stop and is marketed by its creator Paul Sack as the official, easy-to-use punctuation mark to emphasise a sarcastic phrase, sentence or message. Similar in intent, but easier to type, a full stop followed by a tilde, is the snark mark. The asterism is a little pyramid of three asterisks used to indicate a subchapter or section break, but it's fallen out of use, but that used to be quite common. Finally, Crezzo recommends the exclamation comma and the question comma, enabling us to express surprise or ask a question without ending a sentence. And if you're interested, I leave you to seek out dagger, obelisk, carrot and guillemets. But I can't finish without mentioning the Morgan Freemark. So this is like a little iconic image of Morgan Freeman. And its usage is to remind readers that they can read words in any voice they want. So maybe they should read these words in Morgan Freeman's voice. I can't do Morgan. Can anybody do a Morgan Freeman?
No, no.
And so Kevin took this big swig of vodka and straight up ran headfirst into the wall. Or something like that. That's the Morgan Freemark. Anyway, I had a lot of fun exploring those.
Goodness.
That's great. That's really great. The snark. I like the snark, you know, for a sarcastic remark, right?
That's I think great. That was getting in the way of my reading, actually. With that.
Yeah.
I'd like to work out when they're being ironic or sarcastic.
Exactly. I mean, I think they're a bit of fun, and they're maybe a bit like emoticons have kind of taken this role.
Right.
And it's a shorthand, but it's not really intended to be part of a, well, I would say it part of a literary text or something you would get in the way.
Yeah.
But it, in Terabang has its uses.
Yeah, it certainly does.
I've seen people often put exclamation mark followed by question mark to imply that.
I do that a lot. Yeah. I was just wondering, since it's on Wingdings, you said, right? Yeah. And that's on our computers as a font. I wonder if I could import it.
Maybe
I can import it and use it. I like it.
You just go to insert symbol. If you're using Microsoft Word.
You're so smart.
And you can set up a shorthand.
You can make a little shortcut for it if you want to.
Right.
Right, good. Well, that's in Terabangs and lots of other bits of punctuation we've never heard of. And we probably won't hear of them again. But thank you. Thank you very much. Well, as I said earlier on, it's been 2 years now since we first broadcast episode one. And in the following 98 episodes, we explored every avenue of writing we could think of, looking for tips and tricks and ideas to help you grow and develop as writers. We've interviewed chart-topping authors, struggling newcomers and every type of writer in between. And we will never be able to express our gratitude to all of them for their generosity. We're really proud of what we've achieved in the last 2 years. So it's rather bittersweet to have to announce that after this 100th show, we're going to take a break. We're going to take a breather and go off air for a while. We can't say when we'll be back. Lots of us have got different things that we've got to go and sort out. So we can't say when we'll be back. But remember, there are still those 100 episodes for you to go back to and mine for information and inspiration. And there's also the Facebook group, which we're going to be on every day. So please do stay in touch and keep an eye out for, you know, an upcoming show, because we'll come back at some point, I'm sure. Anyway, because we're going to be taking a break, we thought we'd take the time today to look back on what being part of this team has meant for each of us and remember some of those amazing interviews. Now, Pat can't be with us today because her husband's not well. That's one of the things that she's dealing with. But she did send us a very nice recording telling us what she thinks of the past 2 years have meant to her. So let's listen to Pat.
Well, there have been times, if I'm honest, that I've really wished that we weren't doing the podcast. I think because it's felt on occasion like something of a burden, having to do the work for it, having to do the prep, having deadlines and so on. And, it takes up quite a lot of time. But if I weigh that against the amount that I feel that I've learned, then it hasn't been a burden at all. It's just been such an enriching experience. On a practical level, having those deadlines is actually quite good for me because I work better to a deadline. But we've learned so much from our guests and contributors. I think I'm amazed by just how generous people have been with the time, with their expertise. And then, of course, we've learned from the research that we have had to do. You know, you start off thinking, oh, yeah, I like to write. Not much to it, really. And then when you start, you just realise how much there is to it. And it's been a joy. It has absolutely been a joy. And I think now I have got more time, then I'm going to go back and look at some of the episodes that either I've missed or that, you know, I've sort of half remembered. When I was looking through the list preparing this piece, I thought, oh, I don't remember that. Oh, that sounds interesting. And, you know, it's 2 years. A lot happens. I've slept. So much of it I want to revisit. And I think particularly at this time of year, I'm going to go back and look at episodes 53 and 54 with all those fabulous suggestions for Christmas gifts for writers. I thought that was really good. That was really clever. I think 61, we did writers' retreats, and 63, we talked about literature festivals. In the next year or so, I'm going to try and arrange my time so that I can take up one of those. I thought they were really sort of interesting. Sounded like something I would like to do. Also, I think one of the ones that sticks out in my mind was episode 66, when Patsy Collins spoke to us about magazine fiction. Perhaps because I write short stories rather than novels and so on, I was quite interested in that. I've always had this little thing at the back of my mind that, oh, I could do that. Well, I think the last 2 years have told me that I can't necessarily do that, but it's never too late. Maybe it's time to give it a go. Can't finish without a mention for episode 88, where we talked about narrative and creative non-fiction with the lovely Rita Wilson. So there's too many to mention. Those are some of the highlights for me. And as I say, there will be lots in there that I'm going to go back and have another look at. Now I've got the time.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that at times it's hard work. You know, it feels like, particularly in the run-up to a recording, you know, it's a bit like having a job. But it's been great fun, I feel. And I think, and you know, basically, we're not sitting here telling you how to be a better writer. We're learning. We're on the same journey with you. Mm-hmm. And I hope that comes across when we speak. You know, that I've learned a lot going along. And I think we all have. And we continue to learn and to discover new ideas and new approaches.
Yes,
definitely.
Certainly true for me. I've learned a ton while we've been doing this. And I know it has been a lot of work getting the prep done and everything when we're about to record. But I've been one that's kind of not had the burden of all the work that the others have, Stephanie and Teresa and Nicola in particular, with their technical expertise, really had to deal with that. And
you say expertise, fumbling in the dark.
But they got it out anyway. And because I don't know that much about the techie part, I didn't have to do that. But but there is a lot of work for it. And it's been very rewarding, though.
Yeah,
it has been, hasn't it?
Absolutely. What are some of your highlights then, Linda?
Oh, you know, I really enjoyed the episodes with Bambi Lynn, and that was, I think she was in number 65 when we did the, she talked about erotic fiction, which she writes and does very well with. It was just a terribly fun episode. We all giggled like schoolgirls all through the episode. And then she, another one that we got with her was episode 74. Bambi, if you're listening, I really appreciate all the time you gave to us with this two episodes. Episode 74 was about self-publishing, and that was of great interest to me because if slash when Mary Magdalene is ever finished, I thought I would try to do self-publishing and perhaps just audio. Because I just can't imagine that it's going to have a terribly wide reach. And I thought audio would be great with an accent rather than, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we've had this argument before. I think it does have a wide reach, but an audio book would be lovely. But I think one of the things we learned from Bambi, you know, it's all very well to think about self-publishing, make your own audio book. But where does the cover come from? Where does the cover art come from? And she gave us some great insight into that side of it as well.
She did, as opposed to having a publishing house do it because she didn't have that much control. That was a very interesting interview. I really enjoyed both of those. Also, I really liked the one on settings with Becca Puglisi. I've bought several of their books, the Thesaurus of Settings and the Thesaurus of Dialogue and see all these kinds of wonderful things they've she's put together with her partner. And I think episode 90 was where we did that one. I really loved it. There's just such a treasure trove of information that these authors have given us.
Yes, there's a lot of material out there, and it makes you wonder why we still haven't published anything.
Been too busy doing the podcast.
Oh, that's right. We're all on the way. Yeah. But it's just been, I am amazed at how many people were just, and they were all so willing when we asked.
Absolutely. Yeah. The generosity in this community is fabulous.
Absolutely. How about you, Heather?
Well, I've loved it. Although I was probably the most reluctant at the beginning. I hate the sound of my own voice. I'm sure I don't sound on air the way I do in my own head. And there's no mistaking where I'm from, which always upsets me.
Well, do you think you speak like the Queen normally?
Yes, I'm slightly less northern in my head than I obviously am. Yeah, yes, I was reluctant at the beginning, but I'm glad that we've done it and I've really enjoyed it and I've learned loads and loads and loads. I think probably, again, because I had the most to learn. I was the very much the novice. Punctuation, I still struggle with, but I've learned one of the things about point of view. And now I know about it, it's so obvious, but, you know, before I used to get terribly mixed up about it. So, and we've made, you know, five firm friends. That's been wonderful, you know, sort of very special people. I've particularly enjoyed interviewing Anza Rudy, who I've got, you know, it's a bit of a gushing fan. I've read all of her novels and really enjoyed it, and she was fantastic to talk to. A very interesting lady, and as we've already said, you know, gave her time very willingly.
Because we had a technical hitch on the first.
We did, so poor lady had to be interviewed twice, but absolutely superb. Another one was Sam Blake, and that was episode 40. And just listening to somebody who, you know, sort of not only had she written the three novels that we've read, but, you know, she runs a publishing company. She does all sorts of things to do with writing and so busy. And she's got a family and keeps a house. And you think, goodness me, how on earth does she fit it all in? Absolutely brilliant. And Peter Flannery in episode 49, he was fascinating and made me realise that, you know, he was just an ordinary chap sitting there at home. You know, he has to clean the floor and wash the pots and everything that we do. But he's, you know, written two books that have been superb. And he, a little bit made me think, oh, perhaps I can do it after all, if, you know, if he can. But they were brilliant. So I'm sad that we're taking a break, but it might give me a chance to dig all the stories out and actually edit them and look back and make some changes and do something with them.
Put a little collection together.
Yes.
It would be really nice.
If we were giving a prize for, like they do in high school yearbooks, about The Most Improved or something. Heather would win the prize.
I agree.
She went from 0 to 100 in no time.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, Nicola's sent us from afar, has sent us a little piece about what she thinks of the last 2 years as well. So let's have a listen to that.
I've had an amazing time over the last couple of years. I remember the day so clearly when someone said, shall we do a podcast? And I thought, oh, you have no idea. And indeed, it's turned out to be a journey that we've all gone on together. And I have to say, I've really, really enjoyed it. Some of the episodes that have stood out, well, I obviously really love the episodes where people talk about science fiction or fantasy. I remember Peter Flannery's interview. That's episode 49, as really stood out for me because although I never wanted to be a fantasy writer, I do read a lot of fantasy. And he was talking about, you know, the crossing over and the blurring of genres. And subsequently, I've gone on to read a lot of thrillers that have crossed over into supernatural slightly and fantasy and the other way around. So it's really opened up my reading. I really enjoyed E.R. Harding. That was episode 18 on science fiction, and I particularly enjoyed the episode with Neil Fawcett on poetry. That was episode 26, not least because he's a friend of the podcast, and I find him highly amusing. And I particularly enjoyed his workshop at the Marnie Lit Fest as well. It was fantastic. And I've continued to write poetry ever since. One of the episodes that's had the biggest impact on me is one that I didn't actually listen to when it first came out, and it was Matt Owen writing for television. And I believe that Teresa interviewed Matt, and it had a really big impact on me and set me off on a journey of finding out about screenwriting and being really interested in screenwriters. You know, just generally thinking, oh, perhaps this could be the thing for me, because I found that it wasn't so much emphasis on the things that I'm really not good at, which is grammar and spelling. You know, spelling's okay because you can spell check, but the whole grammar thing is really something that passed me by, even though I did okay at English at school. So I think the whole thing of writing for television and screenwriting has, in to some degree, set me free to concentrate on dialogue and action and plot. And so since I've got interested in screenwriting and started writing for screen, I've rather neglected my novel, which sort of coincided with me going off the whole first novel idea I had anyway. But I've had lots of ideas for other things, and particularly now I'm trying to work out if my big idea, which is the one I really want to work on, whether that would work best as a film or whether it would work best as a television series. And I'm still very much involved in going through, you know, I've just gone through the Future Learn course on screenwriting. And of course, I was delighted to see that the screenwriting course in BBC's Writers Room is open for submissions. It opens early in December and it finishes on the 6th of January. That's the deadline. So I'm going to have a go at that, I think. So I'm still inspired. I still want to write. And it's been an incredibly positive, powerful experience, not least of which hanging out with these amazing, brilliant, fun, kind, absolutely hilarious on occasions, wonderful ladies. And I've particularly enjoyed getting to know their stories and their characters and seeing the stories unfold week by week. It's been absolutely inspirational. Really an honourable mention for Roy's lunches, which are legendary. And Steph does a mean lunch too. It's been a wonderful experience all round. Thank you very much, ladies. And I hope to see you again soon in the future.
Oh, well, this is turning into a bit of a love fest, isn't it?
Yeah.
That was very sweet. Yeah. That was very sweet.
Yeah.
It's good to hear that she's keeping on with her ideas and
grand
plans.
And have a go attitude, which I totally agree with, and I've said this many times. Enter competitions because you get such a boost even if you just get long listed or, you know, I mean, the flip side is when you don't get anywhere, you don't know if you've missed by a mile or you were nearly. But you know, enter, submit wherever you can, submit to magazines.
We did an episode on winning competitions. It was episode 60 and we interviewed Morgan Bailey, and she's a judge in a lot of competitions. And she gave us some great insight.
She did, actually.
Brilliant. So that's one that maybe we should go back and listen to again during our break.
I remember one of her major points was follow the instructions.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
If it says Times New Roman 12, don't do Arial 11.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You just don't get, you don't help yourself if you don't follow the rules.
No.
And usually they're fairly straightforward.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. And if you remember when we interviewed Eve White and Ludo Cinelli on the episode 57, which was about literary agents, that was their point as well, you know.
Yeah.
They've got instructions and they need to be followed.
Yeah.
They asked for three chapters.
That you've read.
Yeah.
And observed it. Yeah. And it's no use saying, well, I sent the whole thing because nothing happens till chapter 4.
Because that means chapter 1, 2, and 3 need deleting.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, read the instructions, follow the instructions, yeah. But, you know, it's been a wonderful 2 years. I can't believe it's 2 years. It feels like about 2 months or something. But I've learned so much I can't even analyse what I've learned. But I think I've gone from being somebody who maybe gets a character and a situation in my head and just starts writing to somebody who thinks a lot about structure and plotting now, because my ideas fizzle out. They don't go anywhere. Or if you start a story and you don't know where it ends, sometimes that can work for you, but very often it just fizzles out. It just runs out. So I'm very focused on learning about structure and plotting, not in a formulaic way, but just reading what I can, picking up what I can. So that's been a progression that I've made. Don't be too self-critical is another thing. You know, I think I'm over this whole thing of like making this page perfect before I move on to the next page. I know I've got to go back and edit it. We talked about that last week. So I think that's something I've learned, just to progress and to leave some of the flaws and mistakes in there and work on. Listen to criticism, but know your own mind. And there's a slight contradiction in there, but we do find, you know, sometimes two or three people around the table will make a point and another person will make an opposite point. And as the writer, it's up to you to go with your gut, which feels right. You know, if you're getting conflicting advice, you do have to make those choices. But, you know, I think we are all open to criticism and, you know, we don't even mind sharing it with the world.
<That's>
so,
right.
You know, it's really important. That's how you learn. If you're not making mistakes, you're not learning.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, you know, It's quite hard to pick out episodes that have been important to me. But one very obvious one is episode 70 on transmedia with John Lomas Bullivant, because he's actually had a significant impact on the dystopian children's novel that I'm writing, because he was the judge. That's my first contact with him was as a judge in a competition in which the opening chapter of Ranella was longlisted. Didn't win, didn't make the shortlist. But because of the communication I had with him through that, he really gave me a key idea, because he asked me some very probing questions about this. And what I'd written was just a scene, just the idea of the unextincts were there in this dystopian future world. And it's because of his probing that I really got the idea about the children being a precious commodity in the outside world, where their fertility is low. The children in the Morea, the area where Ranella lives, are a commodity. So he's been a big influence on my writing. But also, you know, it is very interesting, this whole idea of transmedia, that story can cross from book to audio to TV, to cartoon, to film, and it's something to be aware of when you're writing as well, I think, to give your story the potential to cross those boundaries. I very much want to go right back almost to the beginning and listen again to episode 5, because we interviewed J.A. Brunning, author of the Witherstone trilogy for young adults, which is set in the 17th century, just after the Civil War, and has elements of witch hunts in it as well. And because at that time I wasn't writing for children, I need to go back and listen to that again. I think I can learn from that, although I'm aiming at a slightly younger age group. And of course, episode 20 with the wonderful Chris Heath. Again, he's writing for a slightly younger audience than me, but it's all interesting. And he's such an entertaining and wonderful person to talk to anyway. We've had occasion to interact with him at festivals and things as well. So I'd highly recommend.
And his big message was, it doesn't matter if it's a real world or a dystopian world or a completely fantastic fantasy world. There are rules in every world, yes, and you have to know what the world rules are and make sure it.
Yeah, absolutely. Happens. Yeah, you need that internal consistency, internal integrity. But we've met so many wonderful people, you know, and as has been said, all of them shared their expertise for free. Craig Smith in episode 58. Who wrote the Wonky Donkey book, stands out to me as just a very appealing human being, actually. Just a lovely, lovely guy and a wonderful story. He's a singer-songwriter, but he believed this song, which I think won a song competition, a songwriting competition in his native New Zealand, but he believed in it as a book, and he buttonholed somebody and said, listen to this CD, I think it'll make a book. And the rest is history. You know, the YouTube of the Scottish granny reading it to her grandchild and absolutely collapsing in laughter went viral. And he's just had a wonderful, massive success with that. And you wouldn't wish it on a nicer person, I think. So that was great. I loved meeting Kate MacDonald of Handheld Press in episode 64. So, I mean, Kate MacDonald just started her own small press with no experience. She found herself, I wouldn't say unemployable, but at a time in life, you know, having lived abroad and come back to the UK, where there weren't many doors opening for her. And she started her own handheld press. And I have bought many of their books, actually. But it's a very interesting small press with kind of forgotten classics by women, forgotten science fiction classics. So that's an excellent episode for me. I won't forget in a hurry my impromptu yoga session with Helen Saddard in episode 79. I thought I was going for an interview. We were talking about well-being for writers and she was talking about yoga. She was talking to us about yoga and she had me doing the exercises in my chair, which was great fun. I've absolutely loved getting to know our listeners. And there are so many of you who interact with us on the Facebook group, but particular standouts, Andy Larter, who spoke to us in episode 23 about Eastcote writers in the south of England that he organises. And we were talking about the benefits of being in a writing group. Kevin Russell in Ibiza is a regular contributor on our Facebook group. And, of course, not forgetting our super fan, Frank Carver.
Yeah,
I've loved working with the guys on Facebook.
Yes, I enjoy so much the remarks that come on, and sometimes it makes quite a thread.
Yes, the funniest sometimes. Yeah.
I was very flattered recently when one of the writers that we interviewed, Keziah Frost, and I think that was episode 47, and we were talking about late starters. And recently on the Facebook group, she posted how much she loved the podcast and that she listens to every episode. And especially enjoyed hearing me read about Mary Magdalene.
Oh
my heart flipped over.
Yeah. Great, how nice. Yeah. You need your own little program.
Well, no, you know, I think, I don't know if listeners know how much it means to us to get feedback.
Oh, absolutely.
And it can be negative if it's constructive. Absolutely. But thank you, Keziah Frost, for doing that for me. Made me happy.
Yeah, that's good. And I think for me, there's been one clear message that's come through on every single, with every single person that we've spoken to, and that is keep at it.
Yeah.
Keep trying, keep persevering, keep writing, because none of these people that we've met have just done it overnight. Yeah. Nobody just sits down and writes something and then becomes a best-selling author. But, you know, for those that were best-selling authors, remember Nora Marshall, who wrote Friend's Request?
Yes.
When she took the time to speak to us, bless her.
Yeah.
You know, she was top billing on Amazon at the time and the really, really big news, that book at the time. She took the time out to speak to us and she was saying what she did was she took a very ordinary, everyday situation and twisted it So, you know, we all get a friend, the odd friend request on Facebook, but this time it was from somebody that the heroine protagonist thought was dead.
Oh, so
that was the whole psychological thriller there.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great interview, I remember. And then, of course, do you remember Aisha Mackay? Just before Killing It came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she was up to her ears in Radio 2 interviews, signing books in Waterstones and so on. She was up to her ears in it. She gave us the time. Her second book's just come out, called The Nursery.
All right.
And her first book, Killing It, was optioned by Reese Witherspoon film.
Amazing.
Really?
You know, I mean, that was, and she, you know, she was giving birth to her fourth child while she was writing that book. She was getting up early to write at the kitchen table in the mornings.
Yeah,
and it really came across to me that she just had to make time to write.
Yes.
Yeah.
Another one, I don't know if you remember Catherine de Bona. She spoke to us in episodes 13 and again in episode 21. And she just, during that period, she'd actually just published one book, but it was a digital imprint. Since then, she's gone on to be signed by a very well-known agent in the UK with Orion. Orion are hailing her as a new superstar. She's writing this time under the name Catherine Slee. If you remember when we spoke to her on the second show, she said she was cleaning her teeth one day and the plot just came to her end to end. She just went and wrote it. Just like that. It wasn't just like that. It was years and years of trying.
Exactly.
And that's what happens when you try for years and years. Suddenly you'll clean your teeth one day and the whole thing.
And also then she has been sitting at her desk a lot of hours.
Oh yes, doing absolutely. That, you know? Yeah. Absolutely. But isn't it wonderful that all those people gave
stunning.
Us their time?
It is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We're so grateful.
Yeah. And there's been a lot of progress made here. I remember in the beginning of the podcast, I was always on to Teresa about not finishing anything. She kept writing, starting things that were so interesting and then starting something else. And now look, Ronella is, I mean, she's going to have a book here in no time because she's been at it and adding, sticking with one for a long time now.
It's still away from being finished, but it's a lot further on than any other novel started,
it's
and
wonderful.
It will be finished. And it has to be because I've got an idea for another one.
Oh.
Good.
And then Stephanie has finished one novel and started another. I mean, this group has really helped us all, I think. Pat has written some marvelous short stories. Mm-hmm. And Nicola has frustrated me so much because she started her first science fiction effort. I think it was science fiction or fantasy, whichever category that goes in. But
then it became a thriller.
Then it became a thriller.
Action adventure.
But anyway, I was really interested in that book she was writing, and I wanted so much to get to the next bit. And then dropped it, and now she's...
But she wasn't just writing one book, that's it.
No, it was
a trilogy. Writing a trilogy.
Yeah.
And now she's writing a TV series. That's great.
And
that's Nicola's so can do and so brave.
I know, and really...
She'll hit the seam of gold one day, I'm sure. Mm-hmm.
In between all that time, she started doing rap.
I don't remember which episode it was, it was a recent one in the 90s somewhere, but it was her work in progress, and I think we agreed that middle-aged, middle-class white women
shouldn't do that.
It was great, actually.
It was really good. And then Heather, as I said, is definitely most improved. She's done so much, and now she's entering competition. She wrote a play, and I'm still struggling a lot with my first effort, but it's helped me an awful lot. I've written a lot more.
We'll get farther along.
Thank you. It's been a wonderfully productive time for us.
Good. We'll have to catch up with each other soon and put out another podcast, tell you all where we're going.
Yeah.
Well, we're getting to the end of the show now, and as I said, I'm starting to feel a little bit emotional. Heather, tell us, for the last time in a while, what's on your bedside table?
Well, this book is haunting me. It's called The Slap. Apparently, it was shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize in 2010. And it says, at a suburban barbecue one afternoon, a man slaps an unruly boy. The boy is not his son. This single act of violence reverberates through the lives of everyone who witnesses it happen. The Times said the slap places family life under the microscope and the outcome is nothing less than a modern masterpiece. So everything there makes it sound as though it's going to be a brilliant book. It's written by a Greek Australian called Christos. Now then, I'm going to struggle with this. Tissolicus, do you know?
I would suggest Cholkas.
There we are. From the expert.
Christos. No, not expert, but that's
yes.
Suggested.
Christos who?
Cholkas.
Yeah. Cholkas. Unfortunately, I can't get past the bad language. I'm not a prude at all, but I just find the use of quite strong language a barrier to enjoying what's going on. I've kept it by the side of my bed and I'm determined, well, I was determined to finish it, but I think I'm going to have to give up because I really do find the language quite uncomfortable.
Can I have it then, please?
Certainly.
Thank you.
And I'm now handing the book over to Stephanie.
My sundoku just grew by another book. Right, so there we are, 100 episodes almost done. It's been hard work, but an immense privilege. As I said before, we feel so honoured to have been able to meet and talk writing with such a talented array of authors, agents, editors and other publishing professionals. It's a cliche, but we really couldn't have done it without them. But most of all, we couldn't have done it without you, because it's been your feedback and your encouragement that kept the wind in our sails. And we hope that you'll carry on meeting with us on our Facebook group until we're back on air, because that's really, really important to us. So keep writing, keep honing your craft, keep loving the language and keep in touch. For now, bye!